Hello and welcome to show 35 of the Retro Computing Roundtable, recorded Sunday, September 30th. But no matter where I go, there's just one thing I like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz? The RCR is hosted by Cyber Ears. They can host your podcast or audio files too. So go to cyberears.com for more details. It's me, Earl, hosting this round, plus Carrington and David are here, too.
It's you.
It's all me.
It's you again.
What's up, my fellow computer history enthusiasts? Are you guys doing the retro stuff Gingham style? So, you know what's funny?
Gingham style.
I've loved Korean pop music, K-pop, for years, and it's ironic to me that the way it gets introduced to the West is with Gangnam Style. I was just, like, cracking up on that. But that's not retro. Let's talk about retro stuff. Anything new with you, Carrington?
I got new toys.
You do?
But I haven't opened them yet. A whole bunch of new software has arrived, but it's still sealed, so I'll open it up after the show on camera so everyone else can learn what I got at the same time I learned.
Very nice. Maybe we could talk a little bit more about that when we get to the end segment. What about you, David? How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing okay. I'm just
so better now that the sound is working.
I talk and now I'm clear. Do you see how clear I look? But those other times I'm just so blurry. I don't understand. I'm frustrated about this camera, but whatever.
Man, you look beautiful.
Look how clear it looks now.
Just think of it as looking retro and pixelated.
Oh, gosh. So I can't even think about what's been going on retro with me right now. So, but I'm doing good.
Unfortunately, you have a news item. So you're going to have to snap out of it. Speaking of that, let's get into the items of interest. And first up, we've got David telling us about, an exceedingly cool piece of hardware, the RC3 Relay computer. Tell us about this.
So I recently heard from Stephen Torrance, who's the Vice President of Design at the Museum of Computer Culture in Austin, Texas, formerly known as the Goodwill Museum. So you guys might be familiar with that. It's been around for a while. So he sent me a link to, let me go to his email, to one of their peeps over there. Let's see, it's Phil Riles, I think is how you say it, R-Y-A-L-S, Riles. He's a volunteer, and this actually happened last year, but he sent the link to the video and stuff. It's very cool. So he built a working relay computer based on a design by Harry Porter. I think, Earl, did you put the...
did you put that link there? Wow, and he really used that design?
And there's a picture. If you look on the site, there's even a picture of him with Harry Porter, I think.
That's awesome, because Harry Porter is here in the Portland area at Portland State University.
Right, yeah, and I didn't know that till you had linked off. But I had went to the site and looked at the computer working is just fascinating. So everybody needs to go there and check it out. But I think there's some pictures here. So here's a picture of Harry Porter and Phil Riles with the RC3. So that's pretty neat.
So cool, and people have to watch that video.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the ultimate in blinking lights and the sound and.
The noise.
Yeah, Earl and I were discussing in the pre-show that the sound of it is actually kind of musical. It's sort of like Relay Maracas. When I was watching the video, the lights, the blinking lights, were obviously they're attractive, and I love that kind of look of that sort of computer. But the sound was hypnotic. I could just play that in a loop. It was amazing. I am very impressed and delighted by this computer.
And at some point, I guess we need to figure out how we can play video and sound during our YouTube streaming, for
just
the
blink, blink.
So when did Harry Porter build his, Earl?
It's been some time ago.
I remember hearing about it.
But I don't remember exactly when it was.
Oh, well, it says last updated 2009, so I guess it must have been somewhere.
It's been a while ago, but we do have a link to it over there.
That's right.
I think he's got videos also. Mm-hmm.
He does.
And, man, if that thing is still intact over at PSU, I really want to go over and see it.
It's amazing. Is it technically a digital computer still? I guess so, right?
It is, because
it's
using
it's still on-off, 1-0.
As an on-off binary logic element.
Yep. Okay.
Wasn't the very first computer the Zeus, or is it Zusa?
Yeah.
You guys know what I'm talking about? Wasn't that a relay computer? The Z3? Yes.
Or he had, I think he had a Z1 and a Z2, right? But the Z3 is kind of where it was actually fully functioning, all that. Yeah, he used relays, and he used...
I thought it was telephone company relays or something like that.
I think so. He used discarded film, motion picture film, too, for like the...
The paper tape, right.
That's right. Yeah. Yes, that's the big that got wrecked in World War II, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Conrad Zuse.
God, I haven't thought of that in forever.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a digital computer. It's just, you know, the logic elements are slow because they're electromechanical, but
right. It's
awesome. It's about as simplistic, I mean, something like that is appealing because you could look at it and really, really understand the logic. I mean, not just understand what's going on, but physically see what's going on with the relays. It's astounding.
We've sort of full circle with people trying to remake this sorts of things in Minecraft and stuff.
Oh, I've heard about that.
Or Lego computers. So we're back to that again.
Mm-hmm.
And just to mention too, I think so. Conrad Zuse made an early one, and then I guess in the United States it was the Mark One, I believe, was also.
That's news to me.
IBM.
I don't know about that.
Mark One.
I'll look it up. Yeah, the UNIVAC used valves.
But David often just makes stuff up because historical. So
and we don't.
Pretty much
this whole show is just making stuff up. If you want real facts, you're gonna have to
Though I would like to point out that we already have what will no doubt be the best comment of the entire show, so we may as well just stop now, where Grumpier Than Thou has commented, Harry Potter and the Chamber of Relays.
Yeah. I had to look at that name, too, and go, Porter, is that right?
Very nice. Mr. Porter.
This definitely should be some sort of comment award. Well done. That's awesome.
Hey, Carrington, while you have your mic turned on, wait, do you ever turn it off?
No, I'm Mike 24/7. Tune into Carrington FM.
Why don't you tell us about the Apple II prototype?
Well, there was two of them. A few years ago at Kansas Fest, a couple of Apple II prototype items were displayed. They weren't quite finished, and I believe it was Ferdinand Meyer Hermann. So I only say that because I just looked it up. that was Rambler. Anyway, at Kansas Fest, there was a 2E VGA prototype adapter for the RAMworks, and there was also a 2C VGA adapter prototype. And both of them, for some reason, just popped up on eBay. So I had noticed through the month that suddenly there was VGA prototype hardware for the Apple II on eBay. I sent a note over to Ken Gagne to figure out if he knew what was going on with that. These are the items that I believe in a couple of episodes ago over on Ken and Mike's podcast, they had talked about how development of this seemed to have stalled, and even the online store was saying, look, we have no updates, stop asking us. And so it would appear that this now means that these are completely dead, which is too bad. But I think people, like I noticed them, and they were not available for shipping to Canada. Otherwise, I think I might have bid as well. And both of them went remarkably cheap, like $56 for the RAMworks VGA one and something around that for the 2C one. Now, these are not necessarily, since they're prototypes, who knows what working state they're in and that kind of stuff, but they were demonstrated at Kansas Fest. And in the listings, they showed videos where you could see the Kansas Fest presentations about the hardware. So really interesting hardware with a really interesting recent provenance to it. So I was surprised to see them pop up on eBay, and they both did sell. So, but it probably does
very
mean that neither. It looks like neither of these will therefore make it to actual market, which is too bad.
That is a bummer. Does it integrate into the Apple II in such a way that the characters and graphics and that would ordinarily be sent out through the composite port get sent out through the VGA port in a sort of scaled
manner?
Well, that's how usually these things work. With the Apple II, in general, there's two different ways things have been converted, or that hardware has been designed to let you use modern, larger, or VGA displays. The one way is simply by converting the final signal that comes out of the Apple II. So you'll take your, say for the 2GS, there's lots of little adapter boxes that will take the 15 hertz weird sort of NTSC VGA signal or NTSC signal that's coming out of the back of the 2GS, and I'm not a 2GS guy, so I don't think it's all weird magic to me, and then converting that over to something more modern. I have a number of those boxes, I guess 5 or 6 that I got, so that I could compare them for 1 megahertz, and I sort of didn't even bother doing that show because I kind of determined none of them work and they all suck. It's just terrible. Mm-hmm. Just it looks like it's a much
not
more difficult,
surprising.
Yeah, much more difficult thing to do than it appears. And then the other way to go is the way that internal cards have historically always gone. There were VGA cards available back in the day, and more modern ones that basically are doing memory shadowing. So on the Apple II, there's a chunk of memory, and that memory relates exactly to what's on the screen. Like, you've got your various pages of RAM, and then you're like, you know, here's this page, and that is the iRes screen, and that sort of stuff. And so, and then there's just you can look at a memory address and say, well, what is the current, what currently is being displayed? Is it a low-res screen? Is it a mix of text and graphic? Like, what chunk of memory currently represents what's actually on the screen? And then what those cards do is simply keep checking, well, what chunk of memory is the screen that's showing, and read that chunk of memory and then display it using VGA, like sort of convert it and then just output an actual VGA screen. This apparently is the sort that does that, so it seems to be the latter, the memory shadowing. And those seem to be the only sorts of VGA adapters for the Apple II that work. There's been a number around. There's actually currently one on eBay. If you search for Apple II and VGA, I think there's the Video 7, one of the brand name cards currently is for sale. So if somebody's desperate for one of these, you should get one right now. And they're the kind of thing that pops up on eBay every couple of months. There'll be some sort of VGA adapter card for the old Apple IIs, but they generally fetch a very, very high price. They're rare and expensive items.
It's a shame that these cards that were in this prototype status didn't make it, because I feel like that would be a really popular upgrade for the Apple II.
Especially with the current and slow eroding death of Apple II monitors. The monitors
right.
are just, they're dying, and they're
the
not
composite
making
monitors just in general. I mean, you know, we're looking at an extinction eventually here, so.
The monitors
nice.
Themselves are starting to fetch very high prices on eBay, I've noticed. Like, the actual like a decent composite monitor, they're going for more and more money. It's getting harder and harder to get good ones. So
it would be a nice thing to have for like any old computer, you know, like a multiple VGA output device, DVI for that matter, if you could do it, or HDMI, what up, you know, all mm-hmm. things video. And Carrington, do you know, so were you at Kansas Fest 09? You were, right?
No, I think I was there in 10.
Okay. Do you know who's
my first one?
The person selling it, Apple II fan? I'm sorry if you
yeah,
said
I do,
that.
Yeah, so I do know who that is, and you guys have met them as well, but I don't know if we should give out the name, because I don't know if maybe somebody
right.
doesn't want to know like that they're...
Yeah, probably a good idea
like
to keep that under our hat.
Yeah, but it is somebody quite reputable. It's somebody in the Apple II community that I would feel very, very happy to purchase from, so I can say that it's somebody, it's a good guy, or girl, or person, or thing.
Does
okay,
he have a lot of money? Does he or she have a lot of money? Or
well, the person things? Selling it isn't the person who made the cards. So,
no,
so I don't know.
No, Apple II fan. You know, so. We can blackmail him. We'll call him out on the RCR.
Yeah, that's a good way to... So moving on. I've got a report, and this is not an official
report.
I didn't go there. Yeah, report number one. I didn't go to the Retro Gaming Expo in Portland this year as a journalist, per se. I did that last year, and you can see the video up on YouTube that we made from last year's event. But this year I just went with my son just to go have fun. But I wanted to talk a little bit about it because it was indeed a lot of fun. The Retro Gaming Expo in Portland has been growing every year, and this year they moved to their biggest venue yet, the Oregon Convention Center. And it's a huge venue. many, many tens of thousands of square feet. So you walked in the door, and off to the right were the numerous vendor tables where you could find... I mean, I think there's so many console cartridges in one spot that you would think the world would just implode, like it would, you know, reach critical mass or something. And lots of gaming consoles also to be had. Nintendo, Sega, Atari, and some retro computers, not many, but a handful. And also little knickknacks like mugs and the Pixel Party people that make the little earrings and necklaces and stuff like that, they were there like they were last year. So in the other direction on the convention center floor were the stand-up arcade. It's just an amazing area. And last year, the stand-up arcade, the free play area, was kind of crammed because they didn't have much square footage. So if you wanted to go play Galaga or Asteroids or those sort of things, then you were really shoulder-to-shoulder with the other people. This year, they had more square footage, so it was a much more relaxed, more comfortable. They had lots of pinball machines. And one of the folks that I was there with, Tom from the Commodore Club, is really a pinball enthusiast, and so he was just in heaven playing all these different pinball machines. And a lot of this free play, or maybe all of it, was arranged by a local retro arcade here in Portland called Ground Control, a very popular and famous place here in town. And, you know, a fun destination if you want to go party like it's 1989.
That's cool. So, I'm just looking at their website right now, and yeah, it's, I guess it's a full retro or full classic arcade. That's awesome.
Yeah, Ground Control is fun.
We don't have that in Toronto.
And so the World Tetris Championships were happening as well, and so I saw some of the introductory activities for that going on. And anyway, it was just a lot of fun. It was a nice, comfortable environment. I got to meet up with a bunch of the local retroites here in Portland, and I got to play Battle Zone, which I haven't played on a stand-up arcade game for a long time, and I just absolutely love that game. Also, in addition to the stand-up arcade boxes, they also had a bunch of free play consoles. So if you wanted to go play NES or PlayStation, that kind of thing, they were available. You just sit down, pick your game, and go. I played on the Intellivision, a game that I haven't played in maybe 30 years, a favorite of mine called Sea Battle. I just absolutely loved back in the day. So that's my report. It was very much fun. And, you know, it sounds like there was a grand success. It sounds like all systems are go for next year. So, you know, we had a great event here in Portland. I didn't see any of the presentations. That I didn't go see. But, again, they had some of the big names in the retro video game industry, including David Crane and Gary Kitchen.
They were
presenting again for the... Yeah, second year in a row that they were there.
What was I going to ask you was... sometimes, like the VCF East I've been to and the VCF Midwest, I imagine maybe this is kind of a thing, at least with those two, but they'll have a First to Smoke Award. So while you were there, did you see anything like that happen?
No, I didn't see any of the magic smoke coming out of any of the consoles, which is kind of amazing. There were, from time to time, some of the stand-up video game machines that would go out of order.
And, the Blinky, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, since the Ground Control crew, I imagine it was them, was there on site, you'd see them wheeling it out and fixing it up and that kind of thing. Didn't see any magic smoke.
So can I ask, you're saying there's a Ground Control, and you were hanging out with a guy named Tom. Was he a major? I'm the only one who thinks it's all a little suspicious.
Very nice. Very nice. Very Bowie.
Remember we had a show, we played that music. I don't remember why, but we did.
Because we break copyright. That's what we do.
That's right. We're rebels.
So no, we sampled it. We only just sampled the music.
Yeah. Yes. Fair use, right?
Right.
So, David, you have something in here about 101 classic computer ads?
Yeah, and this is not new, this posting on Boing Boing, but it's great. And so my brother sent it to me, and I go, oh, I think I've seen this before. But then I started looking at it, and, you know, it's just awesome. So it's just
I was wondering what you meant by brother Keith. I was like, is it a monk? that sent it to you?
No, so my real brother, Keith Grealish, who lives in San Diego, so he sent this link to me, and it's, you know, it's a lot of fun looking through. So 101 classic computer ads. So, yeah, it was posted like 4 years ago, so it's been on the net for a while. But check them out, because there's just tons of great old ads there.
Wait, so you're having us bring up and link to something from 2008? Well, we are a retro podcast, but still.
That's the thing.
Yeah, it's timeless. They're all old ads, so, yeah.
Yeah, they're not changing over time. You guys should check out the YouTube, by the way, when I was doing some research for the K-Pro that I got, that I'll talk about in a minute.
Oh, yeah, there's people that do that, too.
Yeah, you guys should check out the... like it's a 30-second YouTube of an old TV ad for K-Pro. It's pretty hilarious. Hey, do you guys remember that one where the guy, you know, they're talking about how the K-Pro is complete? It comes with software and everything. The guy's like, I'd like that $1,700 computer. And the person goes, okay, that'll be $3,495. Wait, what? Well, how much is a $700 computer? That one's $1,495. So I guess I just gave it away, so now you don't have to watch the ad. Oh, well.
Well, yes, no, actually, that ad has been in our show before. So
that's right.
But nobody watches our show.
Just for the audience. But, of course, these things are added, you know, in post-production. We put a little break, but one or two ads in the middle. So, yeah, so that one was a
That was one of the ads. Very nice. That sounds familiar, you know, actually.
Yeah, it's a great ad. It's like from 83 or something, 85, I don't know.
Well, we'll go look at these ads, and we'll also go look at another link that's on here.
It's a light news week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is, but Carrington wants to tell us about the multiple classic computer. That sounds awesome.
Actually,
it's classic.
It is something that's also not new, though. It's but something that's before the show, I was asking you guys, have we talked about this before? Because it's been
up
for a while.
I don't think we have, though I've heard of it before.
I don't remember ever talking about it.
I couldn't remember. And it's something that I remember when I first heard about it, I couldn't pick up one because I think it was out of stock or something like that. Anyway, the MCC, the Multiple Classic Computer, is a tiny little box. And basically all it is a little box you can plug joysticks in, and you can plug it into either, it's composite out, or you can get a version of it that has VGA out, or S-Video, or something like that. And it's sort of like a computer version of the Atari Flashback. What it does is emulate and play games for the C64, and also for the Atari 2600, and also for the Amiga. So these sorts of things have always appealed to me, like if you don't want the original hardware, you don't have space to collect 9,000 different things, but you want to just dabble. Like for a guy like me, who's really an Apple fellow, and I'm going to keep a couple of vintage Apple computers around, but I'm not going to keep around an Amiga. I just don't have room for it, even though I spotted some for the last show at that local... surplus place. But this is the sort of thing that this sort of thing appeals to me, and this looks like an interesting version of one. And I've read some fairly decent things about its compatibility. So it comes preloaded with a whole bunch of games. You can also download game sets, and it has an SD card slot. So you can basically just download images for Atari 2600 games or C64 games, plug them in, and bingo, you've got an operating game player. It really is just for games because it doesn't have a keyboard. So it's not going to do everything you could do with a C64 and Amiga. But hey, who wants to use a C64 or Amiga anyway? So but if you're just looking to play the games, then it's a terrific, very small, relatively cheap device you can pick up to just, if you want to play a bunch of C64 games or sample them or Amiga things or Atari 2600 stuff, but you don't want to go and actually have a 2600 and a whole bunch of carts, then this is a very small, very convenient little device that will do all three of those in one little box. So.
Very cool. You know, one thing that I've wondered about is what kind of an emulating machine could they make out of the Raspberry Pi? I've been thinking, you know, I bet that it's got enough power to emulate a bunch of the old classic. I wonder if you could put together a package with the Raspberry Pi, maybe use some of the general purpose I.O. Pins that are on it to hook up an old classic joystick or something like that. It got me thinking, it seems like there's a number of ways that you could package the Raspberry Pi where it would be something like this. And all of that software is out there. You've got emulators for all these various computer models, and you've got mass for just your general gaming emulation. So I wonder if anybody's tried that. I haven't read anything about that yet.
Not that I've heard. With the Raspberry Pi, though, you could do it.
I still want a Raspberry Pi, and I don't have one, and I'm going to be all pouty about it.
And it's still hard to get, right?
Yep.
They're a little easier now. I think they've got the non-Ethernet models are actually in stock. The Ethernet models are...
That's news, because the last time I looked, there was nothing in stock, and it was annoying.
Yeah, I just saw a tweet about it a couple days ago. They might be gone now, but... So anyway, on to the next thing. So the VCF Midwest 7 happened, as David put here. And it was a good
deal
time.
With it.
That's right. It happened, whether you want it to have happened or not. And there are pictures to prove it. You know, the old saying, pics or it didn't happen. So if you go to this link that we have up in the notes, vcfmw.org, you're going to find a number of picture galleries from Bill Degnan, Glenn Homer, Silent 700. That's a TI terminal, isn't it? That was a VT emulator. Frankencelleries, that's hilarious. Goog, who is Greg here in town in Portland, I guess he went. Shifted Space, and a lot of pics up on Facebook groups and that kind of thing. So, and I looked through some of these. It looked like they did have a good time there. We don't have a report from anybody who was actually there, right?
No. No, not that I've heard. I emailed the two Jasons Jason from the Emergency Commodore 1 and then Jason...
And Voorhees.
Yeah, from the VCF. So actually, of course, just remind everybody, this is... The links are here at VCF Midwest, but it's also the Emergency Commodore Chicago.
Well, you know, I've been trying to get together with Greg here for the last couple of weeks for a coffee. I'll see if I can't Shanghai him into talking a little bit about the VCF Midwest, see if I can get a little mini report from him.
Maybe he prefers tea.
Maybe he
does,
but I've seen him at Starbucks.
Back to you.
So I know he likes at least something at Starbucks. So what are they doing over at the Internet Archive? They're adding new magazines. Gosh, these guys, they're just dumping terabytes in there, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Jason and that team over there, they're just, you know, crazy archiving monsters here.
Well, this is something that one of our fans submitted to us, and I snuck in another little link, too, because I just thought of it. Something not related, but since this is the last time I talk about the news. But, so Roman, who's one of our fans, and from dudeslife.com, so he's got some interesting blog content about retro computing, as well as some other stuff. But so he let me know that, there's been added a lot of Byte magazines at the Internet Archive. So, of course, there's a link there. And he created a nice link that puts it in publication date order, which is handy.
Do they have the 77 one where they introduce the Apple II? Because, you know, I had that magazine, and I lost it somehow. And I've been kicking myself ever since.
That's so funny, because I remember when I broke into your house one time, I found one of those. Such a coincidence.
That is, isn't it? I just walk around the house kicking myself all day. It's weird. My
these all look to
me.
So I noticed that some of the up top here says volume 9, number 1 from 1984. And then it's got some volume 11s, and then volume 10s, 9s, and then 8, what I assume would be 1983, 7, 1982. So let's see what's last. So I don't know if it goes back
that far. It's taking a little while for the site to come up. I'm trying to bring it up here myself. Waiting for archive.org.
So
I'm
real quick,
personally blame Jason for
it came up
delay.
Instantly for me.
Oh, there you go. So it looks like it goes back to here's volume 0, number 1, volume 1 and 2. So I guess, it doesn't have any volume 1. It's just volume 2, which would be, 77? So maybe, yeah.
Nice. This is so awesome.
Yeah. And each one is a time capsule, you know. The industry, what was
it
going
is.
On.
It's just beautiful. It's like the, you know, all these magazines, they're like the print version of having Computer Chronicles online.
And those earlier ones are getting harder to get. You can get everything, right? Especially on eBay. But I mean, last time I looked,
depends on how much you want to pay for it. Yeah.
Yeah, $20 to $30 a piece in a lot of cases for those.
Mm-hmm.
So the other quick item I just wanted to mention, and it was that, don't forget about this Apple I auction. I guess none of us have heard a lot about that recently. There's a lot of buzz about it at the end of August. But anyway, that's happening October 9th.
Mm-hmm.
So just thought I'd
mention that. Wow, right up. Yeah, yeah. No, it's
I'm not going to bid.
This time, you've got enough Apple Ones?
Yeah.
Purchase the last two, you're going to let someone else have this one.
And actually, let me mention, so our co-sponsor of the VCF SE here in the Atlanta area is a guy named Lonnie Mims who wants to open a museum. He has an Apple One. In fact, I'm not mistaken, I think he might have two, believe it or not. So I'm going to be interviewing
him. That's just selfish.
Take pictures and video and stuff.
That's just, yeah.
So,
that's too many.
One.
He should he should give one of those to you, David. Because if you've got two Apple Ones, that's an Apple II.
Yeah.
And I mean, they're a lot more common.
I'll be all right.
So.
But that'll be featured at the show, which is exciting.
That is going to be.
With security guards.
You know, you just about would have to, right? I mean, with a.
Yeah, actually, in all seriousness, he plans on having security guards. I mean, for everybody's benefit, but especially that.
Yeah.
Like, he wouldn't leave it there overnight either.
Yep.
Yeah, it's worth $150,000.
Yeah. Be amazing to see one.
It's like that'd be like the Hope Diamond or something crazy, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. So, Carrington, these glitch screen prints, these are amazing. Nice.
Yes, Melissa Barron. You guys probably know about her and her glitch screen prints, correct?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, yes. I've heard of her, yeah.
So I met Melissa, who's a really, really awesome person, really, really fun gal. She was at Kansas Fest the first year I went to Kansas Fest, so I think that's 2010. And she was, I think it's that year. It was one time when I was at Kansas Fest, one of the years, she was there, and I was lucky enough to meet her. And she was displaying glitch art. In fact, I think she was returning, so I think it was her second time at Kansas Fest and my first or something like that. I can't remember. It was a long time ago. And so, but she makes these really, really cool things. She sort of hacks games, gets video glitches, and then uses a loom to weave the glitch stuff into basically tapestries. Remarkably, crazily cool stuff. She had a great table at the vendor fair at Kansas Fest. Not this last year, but I guess the year before, something like that, where there was a really big tapestry that caught my eye that frankly, I should have approached her and said I want to purchase it because it was like a big code listing, and it was just enormous and amazing. So anyway, her glitch screen prints are now available on Etsy. So I wanted to give her a plug because he's a cool member of the Apple II community and makes really neat art that's related to vintage stuff. So it's cool things.
And these are remarkably inexpensive.
Yeah, they're cool.
Yeah, exactly. So it's real. I mean, it's great art and from that you can buy directly from the artist, and it's really interesting and it jibes really well with people that would be interested in this podcast. So something great to hang on your wall. I've picked out something that I want from her and I've emailed her because by default on her Etsy thing, it doesn't let you purchase from outside of the U.S. But she's got a note there saying, "Hey, if you want to buy from a different country, just drop her a note." So I have dropped her a note, and hopefully I will get the thing that I'm looking for. So we'll have a link to her Etsy store in the show notes, and also a link to her presentation at Kansas Fest, I think 2010. Again, over at archive.org, the keepers of everything, they've got a copy of the video of her presentation, so you can sort of learn about how she makes this glitch art, and it's really interesting to watch how it's made. And I think if you see how it's made, you're all the more interested in getting a copy because it's created in a really interesting way. So.
It's really cool. I'm ordering one right now.
Yeah, and
I did not order the one that I want.
Yeah,
I almost didn't link to it, thinking I could get the one that I want and then link to it, but that seemed selfish.
And David, we just a note. We are hearing the tappity tap of your
keyboard.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
And David thumps away on his microphone. With
yeah,
his
he's just
the
microphone trying to.
And in my chair, I mean, I got problems.
Those to order.
I got lots of problems. I'm sorry. I think I got
problems.
Like the handle,
you
the handle's broken on my chair here, so I don't know how you play. And then it makes noise, and then microphone on the table. This camera, look at the camera. It's like it's all blurry half the time. And, at least audio is not bad, right?
No, wait, what? What?
Yeah, what? What were you saying, David?
Still and talk. It sounds good.
Yeah, definitely, she did.
I'd like an Atari 2600 system, please, and everything that goes with
everything?
It.
Everything? You sure you want everything?
I want everything.
Now you're getting your low price, up to $30 of rebate office, and a free pack.
Is that everything?
It's not everything. You can get nearly 300 different cartridges.
300?
That's nothing.
It's something.
But it's not everything. Soon there'll be a voice module, trackball, remote control joysticks, and a computer keyboard.
It's amazing.
It's amazing, but it's not everything.
It's not everything.
Soon there'll be educational games, too.
Is that everything?
That's everything. For now.
For now?
The Atari 2600.
Now get up to $30 in rebate offers, plus a free Pac-Man.
You're watching the most exciting game you will ever see on your TV set. Telstar by Coleco, with three different games. Telstar Tennis, with digital scoring, variable speeds. Telstar Hockey. Each player controls a goalie plus a forward on the other side. Oops, a goal. And Telstar Singles Handball, a game you play yourself. Telstar Handball, Tennis, Hockey. All three at an exciting low price. For great family fun, hitch your TV to a Telstar by Coleco.
Let's talk about retro computing GIFs. And I think that those glitch screen prints qualify. So you kind of upstaged me there, Carrington. But I saw something while I was at the Retro Gaming Expo that I thought was a really cool... it's not strictly retro, but I think a retro person still involved in computing and gaming would really like this. It's a Minecraft foam sword and pickaxe combination set. And part of the reason...
I think it's retro. I think it's arguably...
Well, I mean, you know. Minecraft's like brand new and going right now, but... If you've
but it's clearly
Minecraft,
kind of
it's got that pixely look. You know, Minecraft definitely, I mean, it's a modern game, very popular, exceedingly popular, but with a pixely, very blocky kind of graphic style. And when I looked at these foam artifacts here, I was just like, oh, now that's just cool. Look at that. You can see the blocks. So that's my retro gift pick. It will set you back $42.49. In order from Amazon.
That's kind of a lot.
Yeah, it's not cheap, is it? I mean, they had just the one thing, the pickaxe, at the Retro Gaming Expo, and all by itself, that was $20. So, but hey, you know, you got to pay for your gaming stuff.
So it's more than twice to get the two of them.
Well, the other one I think is a little bit more.
Bigger.
You can look at the individual pieces on Amazon as well. Cool. They have those.
Very cool looking.
But, yeah, that glitch art is a better deal. So you better get what you want, Carrington, because I think
I'll get right on it.
Might get swooped out from under you. Speaking of buying stuff, we had eBay auctions from last time. And, David, you had a Mac 128. So how'd that do?
Let's take a look. So I just finished my purchase.
Very good.
You're killing me. I bet you bought what I want.
It looks like it sold for $1,000.
Wow.
Was that a buy it now? I think it was less than that, wasn't
yours,
it?
Yours, I thought it had sold before it listed last
maybe so.
It had already bought it now by the time you
listed. I don't remember. But anyway, so it sold for $1,000, and the person has a feedback. And
yeah, it sold on the 16th.
Yeah. That was I think that's a pretty good deal.
I think the person... I was surprised it was listed for $1,000 buy it now. I think... They could list it for $1,000 starting price and probably got more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With all the boxes and that kind of stuff and being demonstrated.
No surprise that sold.
Yeah.
All the boxes.
My item sold too is a combination of WordPerfect and DBase 3 Plus. Just a little tweaked because the combination of those two sold for less than what I bought the DBase 3 Plus for all by itself. It sold for $50. Now, I can tell by looking at the box, though, that it was DBase 3 Plus 1.0, and I didn't really want that. I wanted 1.1, so I'm going to sour grapes on that and say, so what? But anyway, it did sell. And what about yours, Carrington, this Heath keyboard?
It's not about whether or not our choices sell.
So I take it hasn't sold yet. But this thing is so cool. I can't believe that it hasn't sold.
So I had picked the Heath HTX10 keyboard terminal. It's a keyboard with a terminal built in.
Yeah. Who knew Heath made Commodore 64s?
It does kind of look like one. And I had the Zenith version of the same thing, the Zenith ZTX, I think. So it did not sell. Still listens. There's 11 days left, so still a chance to get it. According to eBay, there's only one watcher, and I think that's me. So it looks like nobody's interested in this thing but me. But I'm not pulling the trigger. Nah, for $200.
No, but there's a make offer. It's $199, or there's a make offer.
I don't have the need for anything. I don't. What do I want this thing? If I got this, I'd like it, and then it would sit on a shelf. I'd never use it, and I'd end up with a wall behind me like David's wall of stuff.
Of awesome stuff, you gotta admit.
A wall of nothing, David.
Yes, with your backup art.
Even his camera can't focus on David. There's so much stuff behind him.
Do we know? I think we talked about this last time. Whether this...
You just said it. That might actually be it.
Whether this
I'm
does...
I'm sorry. No, that's why it can't focus. Is all this.
David lives in a little solipsistic world.
What's going on, man? Something's happening.
Sorry, Earl.
No, I'm curious if this guy does any terminal emulations, or if it's just
it does terminal emulations. But if I recall, the one that I had when I was young did not do VT100, and that's why I stopped using it.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
But it does. I remember it had a few different terminal emulations it did, but I think they're all pre-VT100.
Well, let's talk about new stuff. Carrington, you're up first.
Okay.
Yeah, the rare non-Apple.
I got non-Apple. I was going to go Apple. The item that I had selected, David, I looked ahead and saw that you have picked it. And I was worried you would do that because you tweeted about your pick, and I had already selected it as the auction item I wanted. And I'm like, oh, David tweeted about it. Oh, well. And there's a few cool Apple things on right now, I should mention. But I've decided to go non-Apple just to shake things up a bit. I'm going with an MSI 8080. Which I think we, at least one of us, has picked an MSI before, but this is a really clean one. I really liked it. I've got a soft spot for the MSIs, that case, mm-hmm. and all the little rocker switches. So it's a functional one, nice, relatively clean case with just some, like just on the metal outside case, just needs a little fixing up, but the inside looks brand new, pristine and clear, and it's being sold from... I believe Germany, but he has Austria. Listed that it somewhere not in North America, but he has listed that it says it runs on 110, so which is always something you'd worry about buying something from overseas. Anyway, it looks fantastic, so I'm picking the MSI. It's going to sell. It already has a bunch of bids on it. It had nothing when I picked it, and now it's got 6 days left, but it's already jumped up to €655. So,
yep,
it's going to sell for quite a bit, it looks like.
Yeah, it's funny that they list in the auction world's first PC clone, 1975. Now, and in this, obviously, they're not talking about the IBM PC. You could mistake if you weren't paying attention, but it was a clone of the Altair.
Yeah,
so exactly. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I would have said personal computer. Of course, you could say microcomputer clone, but...
Right. But what often these things will come up and it's just like, here it is. This one has been turned on, shown to be working, all the lights are working, the switches work, like you're getting yourself
a
tested and operational one. Yeah, you can look at the video. So that's why it drew my eye. It is, if you wanted to get one and you wanted to play with it, here is a fully working, fully functional one with all the switches and all the lights and everything working. So that's
my
choice.
Really, really clean, and you know, other than it's interesting because it has just those few little blemishes on the top case. I don't know if you guys look at the pictures, you can see where somebody scrubbed them.
Yeah, I think somebody tried to scrub them off. Maybe there were marks.
Or get the gumminess off or something.
Yeah, mm-hmm. something like that. Looks like stickers, or that's probably from something sitting on it that had rubber feet and they adhered after 20 decades. But the inside is crazy clean. I mean, it looks brand new on the inside. Yeah. Oh, it wouldn't bother me at all. I wouldn't mess with.
Do you think those those capacitors have been replaced in the power supply? I would tend to think so.
Depending on the quality of the components in those old linear power supplies, I'm assuming the MSI, like many of the S100 systems, used a linear power supply.
I would think that it did, yes.
And
It does have a 1977 motherboard in it, so it's a much later on version.
Right.
It's really clean. Nice.
Yeah. So that is my choice. Want to get yourself an MSI? Now's the chance.
Boy, I would love to.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how much
just
it goes.
Give me one. David, your pick is like amazingly cool. These things are so awesome.
Now I noticed this is the only thing the person's got up right now, but it says one of three. So
Because if you read the instructions, like he made them. and has made three, and he sent one to Woz, keeping one for himself, and one he's selling. Oh, I guess we should tell people, or you should tell people, what it is.
Oh, okay. Right, and he does say that, but I was kind of thinking that he would sell three, but you're right, he clearly says that. So it's a mini Apple II computer, handmade, converted to flash drive. Now, if you look at the picture, I mean, you would almost swear this is a real Apple II, then you're going, what's the big giant
thing coming out of the back of it? Yeah, that's USB 0.1.
So it's a little teeny resin model of an original Apple II, and it's very authentically done.
I mean, it looks like 3 or 4 centimeters square. It's a little tiny thing.
But, I mean, from the attention, the detail on the keyboard, the case, it's pretty neat. Right now it's up to $26. It's still got, where is it? Oh, 1 day and 20 hours. Now, Karen, you notice who it's sold by, right? 1.megahertz.
Bastard.
From Merrick, New York.
That's me.
Yeah, we thought so. That's why you're going to choose it. So this is
going to put it in America.
So basically, how big of a flash drive is it?
Well, that's the thing, is he doesn't say, but he does link to a YouTube video so you can see it work, so maybe there's more info there. But he says it took him over 40 hours to make it.
You know, isn't it kind of funny that, why not make it into a keychain maybe instead?
No, because this is really cool, and if you have a CFFA 3000, this is the ultimate card to plug into it.
Yeah, so and Blake Patterson had tweeted that, I think.
That's right. Blake did say that. Or you could use it on the 2GS USB card or the MP3 card as well. I've got one of those. So I seriously have considered bidding on this. I'd like to know what the capacity is, but if you're going to use it inside an Apple II, it kind of doesn't matter what the capacity is. So I just think it's really cool.
I'd like to see it mass-produced.
Sure, I wonder if there's a chance to make a Kickstarter out of it or something. So. But if you can head over to YouTube and there's a video. We should put a link in the show notes for the video as well. So,
fun. Well, and for me, this time around, I'm picking a Microvax 2. This is a little, stand-up server-sized version of the DEC VAX system. It's currently running. It's got a SCSI drive, and it's running OpenVMS 7.3. The interesting thing is this chassis is built around a bus style, a plug-in card style called QBus. And QBus is the same technology that's used in my PDP-11 that I have. QBus was one of the, two or three different styles of bus systems that DEC used in these things. And so the person even mentions in this eBay ad that if you wanted to, you could pull the Microvax cards out of this thing and pop in PDP cards and turn this into a PDP-11 if you wanted. So lots of flexibility there. On the flip side, I've got a Microvax QBus card that if I did a little modification to my backplane, I could pop it in and turn the PDP system that I have into a VAX. These were quasi-interchangeable, but I thought the price here was really reasonable for what you're getting. It's a fully functional Microvax with the cards with the SCSI, and the SCSI cards actually are one of the things that are pretty premier in this QBus world, and the person mentions that. They say something like, the price takes into account what the QBus SCSI boards go for on eBay. If you don't want it, I can adjust the price and sell it separately. So, but if you take a look at it, the machine looks pretty darn clean and doesn't look like it's the size of a small refrigerator. In a sense, it's kind of appealing to me because if I could run a PDP out of this thing instead of that gigantor thing that I have in my basement right now,
that's exactly what I was thinking when you said that. I thought, there's the appeal. Get a PDP-11 that doesn't take a room.
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's my pick, and it really looks nice. It looks like it's been well taken care of.
Nice, and it's
but in a way, it wouldn't really be a PDP though. I mean, though it functions as one. You know what I'm saying? It's real hardware, so I don't mean that, but it's just
kind of. I mean, it's the same as I can tell from some of the disk packs that I have that the PDP system that I have at one point was converted to a VAX because there was a card for the VAX, the MicroVAX QBus card, and I think a 1 megabyte memory card that I have that I can't currently use.
Were you shocked by that? Is that like dating somebody and you find out they used to be a man, that sort of thing?
No, not quite that drastic.
My PDP used to be a VAX. Right. I love you anyway. I love you
for
who you are.
That's right. I love you just
you have
the way
the
you
crying
are.
Game in PDP.
Don't be ashamed of being a VAX.
We'll make it work.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's funny. I think that's it for our eBay stuff. So I think we should talk about like closing discussions. Let's close. We're closed. Carrington, before we turn off the lights, what do you want to talk about?
Well, do you guys have something like Nuit Blanche in your respective cities?
That sounds familiar, but I don't know what it is.
It was Nuit Blanche here in Toronto last night. It's something that I believe started in Paris, and a number of cities have it around the world. Nuit Blanche is an art festival of sorts where the entire city becomes an art show. It starts at dusk and it goes to dawn. So it went from dusk to dawn last night. And there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of things happening around the downtown core. And everybody walks around and there are bands and art installations and comedy stuff and interactive things. And like you just, like I just walked like a block from my house to just go grab something. And just walking there, I had to cut through a little park area. And in that tiny little area, I passed an installation that was taking photographs and then would make these little puppets out of it. And then you walk under these blowing white sheets with these little fans that you could control to try to make shapes above you. And then there was an art installation of a whole bunch of posters out in the middle of like nowhere with spotlights on them. And they were just hand-painted QR codes. And you do the QR code, and it would show you poetry on your phone. And just like that kind of thing over and over again, like every block has something like that for the entire city. So it's a magical, amazing evening that we get here, and it's been going on for, I guess, 5 or 6 years. And I love it. It's something I look forward to every year, that you spend the entire evening. There's lots of crowds at the very beginning, but by 1 or 2 in the morning, it really thins out, and there's this magical time between like 1 and 4 in the morning where you're walking around, and the entire city is just filled with art and installations and massive giant wind-up toys and floating balloons of art and just crazy things. Just amazing and magical. So that was last night, and I loved it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would have loved to have done that.
It is a very cool thing. So if it's nothing like that happens in your city, it's something to sort of, I don't know who you petition for, but say, hey, why don't we do something like this?
We have little area art shows, but nothing of the sophistication that you're talking about. That just sounds
It's
fantastic.
Amazing. Yeah, and there's and there's the official stuff because it's it happens once a year and it's on a fixed day, so everybody knows well in advance, and you'll get the program, and there's the whole downtown gets divided into zones. So like I was in zone B, and then there's shuttles that go between the zones because it's so massive. It's like, you got the entire city or at least the whole downtown core doing this. But then of course on the same time, hundreds of people just do other things that aren't part of it. If you just want to do an art thing, you grab a booth, just set up on a corner and just start doing something. So it's like a million buskers seem to be doing things all night too. And so there's the official stuff and weird things, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I really want to visit Toronto one day. Well, there's a restaurant that we've kind of started going to a little bit more, and we were talking to a woman. I think she's one of the managers, and she's from Toronto. Just like last week, we were talking to her for a little bit, and she likes it here, okay, but she was talking about just how cultural it is there. So
it is. It's a very diverse city, which I really like, and I love that it is so diverse. So it's and last night was just the great weather for it, so it's a fantastic time.
Yeah, that's how I really get into that.
So what about you, David? What's been going on with you?
Oh, well, I'm working on the VCF. SC stuff, so it's not until February, so that's still kind of early, but trying to get like t-shirt design going.
Still probably lots of planning that goes on with one of those things for months.
Yeah,
right?
having started as far as call for exhibitors and presenters and that kind of stuff, but went and saw the venue, which is just an old CompUSA, and I think that's going to work out pretty good, but it needs some work. The floors aren't so hot, but I mean, it's great. It's a big It's kind of ironic too, right? This whole CompUSA.
It's so appropriate.
So just doing that kind of stuff. We got a The big news is for the Atlanta Historical Computing Society is, so 1 week from yesterday, next Saturday is going to be the Atlanta Mini Maker Fair, and that's really exciting. So
I've been seeing your tweets about that.
Yeah, with a table, and we'll have some old computers, and plus we'll have some retro kits, especially the Fignition and some of Vince Brill's stuff, and just hanging out and talking to people and building old kits and doing things like that. And that should help, you know, promote the VCF too.
Cool. Will Vince be there?
No.
Oh, that's a
shame. No, Vince won't. To the VCF, you mean, or
yeah, no,
not the Mini Maker Fair?
The Mini Maker Fair.
Yeah, no. And as far as I know, he's not able to make it to the VCF either. But I've been talking to him. I think he's gonna send us some kits that we can sell to people, and then you know people can buy them and participate in a build shop that we're gonna have.
Which is so much fun. Remember, the three of us did that for Kansas Fest, and it's such a fun experience to do a group build.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like it's actually sort of an essential part of it, because I believe like the stuff that goes on at a maker fair, you know, the part that's appropriate for a retro computing festival, I think that should be built in. And actually two things that are key to me is that the retro kit building part of it going on, as well as retro gaming. So we're going to have retro gaming stations all over too for the whole thing. I think those are good, two important, you know, pieces. So that's all. For now.
What about you, Earl?
Well, on my side, I'm desperately trying to get two or three different episodes of RetroBits going here, and I guess failing. I got shanghaied. There was a fella in town that was selling a number of vintage computers, and one of them was a K-Pro 2. I've always wanted to have a K-Pro, so I made him what I thought was a decent, you know, not a highball offer. Thought I'd see if I got it, and I got it. So I went and picked it up. Had an adventure from the beginning because the floppy drives weren't working, but I knew that I could bump into some problems. So did some research, tried some things, I tried cleaning the heads, made sure the belts on the floppies were tight, and they were, but still weren't working quite right. So I replaced them with some other floppy drives that I had on hand. Now the thing's working great. So I've been using some software called Image Disk to make the disk images and play around with it. I'm having a great time. So when you do the little after show here, I'll show the keyboard. That's part of it, the detachable keyboard thing. But so that was sucking up my time that I really should have been using on RetroBits, but I'm imagining in the next few days here I'll get around to that. And I got some travel coming up too. Next week I'm going to San Francisco for a conference. Have you guys ever heard of the cloud storage system called Box? Does that ring a bell?
I haven't.
We're using it for my company. And so they're having a conference in San Francisco. I'm going to run down there for a couple of days. That's about it
like
on my side.
Do you like going to San Francisco?
Yeah, it's fun to go visit. I used back in the .com days, we had an office there, and so I'd shuttle back and forth quite a bit. Now it's been a while since I've been there. So the one thing that I was wishing I could do was break it free enough time to go see the Computer History Museum. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, it's just too far from where I'm going to be, and the taxi bill would have been murder. So I can't go do that, but maybe next time.
And Earl, what did you pull the disk drives? What did they come out of? To work in the K-Pro.
Oh, actually, they came out of my old non-working IBM 5155.
Really?
The portable IBM. So the funky thing is that I pulled full-height drives out of the K-Pro and put half-height drives in, so it really looks weird now, and I got to figure out what to do about that. I'd like to ultimately find a couple of full-height double-sided tandem drives to go in there. That would be much more authentic. Mm-hmm. But for the moment, it's working, so I'm having fun with it.
Okay, so they're the same driving mechanisms.
Yeah, they're just floppy drives. And the interesting thing is the ROM in the K-Pro that I have, there's a couple different ROMs for the K-Pro too. The one that I have will actually accept double-sided drives, so by doing this swap, it wasn't just fixing it, but it also gave it an upgrade. I doubled the storage.
Other than you're able to see into them now.
You see like right into the computer when you're working. You know, which is actually kind of fun. I don't think that I've ever really paid attention on the floppy drives before, had the mechanism open when they're doing things like seeking and stuff like that. It's actually pretty interesting to watch that stuff in action. So I guess that's it. That's a wrap for this show, unless you guys have any parting shots.
Did you guys watch Doctor Who?
Oh, now, I don't get... A friend of mine saw the closer.
Broke my heart.
I don't get BBC America. Don't you tell me anything about it.
Oh, can't believe Doctor Who's dead. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, he's died before.
No, this is true. Yes. Oh,
but
killer show.
I love it. Don't tell me. Don't tell me, please.
I'll tell you nothing.
Please. I've only seen the first Matt Smith with Amy and Rory. I have not seen any of that second season with them because I don't get BBC America. I have to wait for it on Netflix.
You can get it on iTunes.
I could get it there if I wanted to pay a bunch of money for it.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like buying the DVDs. Yeah.
So, all right. So that is a wrap for this show. Our next show is October 14th, so make sure to tune in live if you want to so that you can leave us some comments and we can wrap with you. Please help spread the word in forums and through tweeting about the show. And give us a review on iTunes if you like us. If you don't like us, email us and tell us why. And, you know, we'll chat about it. Yeah, email David. Because he's probably the reason why you don't like us.
Almost certainly.
I mean, let's face it. Go to rcrpodcast.com for any of the links that we discussed and the show notes. And email us and send audio feedback to the show at feedback@rcrpodcast.com. And if you're not sick of doing stuff for us by then, you can also follow us on Twitter at rcrpodcast. And until next time, retrocompute.
Retrocompute. Oh. Retrocompute. I was just, I'll do it.
Yeah. We're just not in sync.